Hello, and welcome to the first in the programs of Media News podcasts. Media News aims to be an authentic voice from the Middle East, particularly promoting the voice of Kurds and the Kurdish question that is so often ignored, self-censored, and suppressed by the mainstream media platforms. Today, we couldn't start our series in a better way, in my opinion, with this particular program about the voices of Kurdish women. We're very honored today to be joined by Hozan Mahmoud, who is a Kurdish feminist, writer, public lecturer, and described on the back of her book as also an anti-war activist. Hozan has written for The Guardian, Open Democracy, The Independent, The New Statesman, and I'm sure many more. The book Kurdish Women's Voices has been described as an intimate account of the everyday lives of different Kurdish women, showing us not only their hardships, but their courage, resolve, and complex humanity. That was by Nadje Al-Ali, professor at Brown University. And by Dilar Dirik, author of The Kurdish Women's Movement, says about the book, Kurdish women have historically been subjected to violence and erasure. In light of this, expressing their own truths is a politically radical stance. This is a valuable contribution. Hozan Mahmoud, welcome.
Thank you, Mark.
To Media News podcast. It's really, you know, such an important book that you have edited. I know from my own experience of working with the Kurdish issue for the last 27 years, how hard it is to get Kurdish people to talk about their own experiences. Mm. And the first thing really that struck me when I was reading through the stories is the harrowing nature of some of the stories, really. The first, I knew that I would do this, that I would, they're just so emotional. Mm. But I did have to say, I did cry on quite a number of occasions, like reading them. So please tell us how you came up with the idea and how you went about such a project, because I mean, the story of the project must be such a story in itself.
Yeah, that's true. Well, thank you very much for this opportunity, Mark, for me to speak about this book, a collection of stories written and told by 25 Kurdish women from different parts of Kurdistan, including the diaspora. I have been an activist myself for a very long time and being very involved in the Kurdish diaspora as well. And so many times, and of course, there are a lot of books and research, produced on Kurdish issues generally, political questions, Kurdish nationalism, and from time to time, of course, on Kurdish women as well, mainly looking at gender-based violence, honor killing, lots of other, types of violence against Kurdish women. But also I have campaigned against violence against women as well in Kurdistan and in diaspora as well, raising awareness among Kurdish women and men likely as well. So I felt that there was a vacuum, there was a gap in knowledge, basically, that we are either portrayed as victims of male violence, Kurdish male violence, or as freedom fighters lately with the revolution in Rojava. And I think while there's element of truth in this portrayal, but also it isn't either or this. There's a lot of other stories and a lot of different identities that Kurdish women have. It's not only either being victim of violence or freedom fighter, the, you know, glorified, exotified, and so on. So that's why I thought I could only do that through getting women to talk about themselves, to write about themselves, not me speaking about different Kurdish women or analyzing them, or, you know, going out there and doing research with different Kurdish women to try to kind of prove my point that this is not our only identity. So I thought the only way I could do that by really staying true to the authentic voices of Kurdish women. This is why I made the call with my colleagues in Culture Project. And then we started gathering stories. Kurdish women approached us. We approached some Kurdish women. I mean, I have met some amazing Kurdish women who have had amazing stories that is now in the book. They felt it was not important to write it or to talk about it, because it's the, like, lots of amazing Kurdish women are out there, lots of fighters, lots of political prisoners. Why me? Why I should write about it? So it was like really difficult. And then because they were so humble, I mean, they've done all these sacrifices. They have put an entire life into activism, into political activism, into revolution, imprisonment, or even into art, literature, and poetry. And they are amazing women in their different capacities, but they just felt like it's not so important to write about it. But I thought for Kurdish women, it is important to write about it. So yeah, luckily we got this, you know, ended up with this 25. In the beginning, we thought we would end up only with 20 and it would be good too. But then later on, we got more and more. So we just said all of them are equally important. That's why we decided to go with the 25.
So the book starts off with Mother Sabria, who she goes to Saddam Hussein's jails, where her son Aram was tortured and executed. And she, in her story, she really sets off the book so well with her dignity, her courage, her pride in the face of the enemy, you know, to the extent almost sort of, you know, telling them that she'll come back another day and pick up her, you know, killing her inside, but not to show the enemy, you know, that they had affected her in any way. And so then we move from South Kurdistan, we go to Rosh Halat, and we hear about the story of Nasreen Ramaz and Ali, which is just absolutely incredible. You know, and it reminds us, you know, when we talk about Kurdish fighters, women fighters in Rojava today, that we forget that actually Kurdish women were fighting with the Kamala in Rosh Halat many years ago. And Nasreen's story was just incredible. You know, from the years of her father being tortured, and this, you know, and her journey, you know, when she joined the Kamala as a Peshmerga, and she fights with her her comrade and lover, and who dies, and then, you know, she journeys to Halabja, and during the gassing in,
and she was only in her 20s, like early 19, 20 years old, she had to endure all of that, and then she had to go back secretly to Iran, and then to come back to Iraq, and then, like, it's crazy how a young person can manage all of that. It's only her conviction for her political belief and liberation that really turned her into such a fighter. And she's really, her story is legendary. I think that is just a very short, it's a fraction of all what she had to endure, basically. And she's still very active in the political movements, I mean, leftist movement in Iran. And like, you have tons of stories like that, really unwritten and untold and undocumented and archived as well. And that's why I think it's important for us to archive this amazing legendary stories of Kurdish women. I mean, throughout history, we must have had hundreds and thousands of people, like women like Nasreen and Kobra and Daya Sabria and Nazanin and all of these women whose stories are there. But it was not written, it was not documented. That's why they are lost into the history. But at least we have access to these women now, and we can read them, and we can celebrate their, you know, pride and their dignity and their living.
Absolutely. And the way that you have edited it, Hausan, is also very good, because you, as you say, you have 25 women, but you have just snapshots. You know, you can just dip in and you can read, but you still get the power of their stories through just reading very, very short stories. Yes. And it's an age range from, I don't know, from 27 up to 70. And then moving on, we hear story of Ruken, a Kurdish woman in Turkey, and going to university and very innocently wanting to campaign on for Kurdish rights in her university, and ending up with a jail sentence of 5 months and having to leave her country. And then into Rojava, to Kamishlo, with Nafia's story, and her father's assassination and a targeted assassination, her ideas of women's liberation inspired by the ideas of Abdullah Öcalan. Women's freedom and democratic confederalism, we hear about that. So what's effect do you think does the division of Kurdistan? So we've heard those four stories from four different parts of Kurdistan. What effect does the division of Kurdistan, do you think, have on the lives of Kurdish women?
The effect is immense, Mark. I mean, imagine other states manage to have their own education system, their own universities, their own knowledge production, their own institutions, whereas Kurdish people have always been involved in an armed struggle in one way or another, just to negotiate, to be able to live and exist. And that's really kept us behind from everything else, from having a proper women's movement, having a proper knowledge production, having a proper, our own version of feminism or women's rights activism or politics. I mean, you know, one century, there's this political struggle for recognition. So that, you know, and all the efforts have been mobilized towards achieving some of the goals of this national liberation movement in different parts and in different forms as well. I mean, it continues until this moment of time, and it's a lot. And then you have people who have been assimilated into being Persian or Turkish or Arab and so on. I mean, in Bashur, only we managed to keep our language in education and so on, but in other parts they are not even allowed to study in Kurdish or to read in Kurdish or to even speak at some point. So that makes you alien to your own culture and language, and that makes you produce everything that becomes that can contribute. Like, even we have many great poets and novelist who produced books, but it is counted towards Turkish literature or Persian literature or Arab literature, not Kurdish literature, you know, whereas actually they were Kurdish because they were assimilated in those languages. They had to write in those languages. So for the sake of Kurdish women's existence, I thought we really have to have stories from women who write in Farsi, Turkish and Arabic, but they feel Kurdish, they have Kurdish identity, but then they have no way but to write in those languages. So we had to translate their stories from Turkish, from Farsi and from Arabic into Kurdish, then translating them back into English. So I think this book also does that. It cuts across borders, assimilation policies, just to say that these women were subjected to torture, imprisonment, and segregation, and assimilation, and lots of other genocidal policies because they were Kurdish. No matter how much you try to meld them in your nationalistic pot of Turkishness and Iranianness and whatever, they still see themselves as Kurdish. They still suffer as Kurdish. They suffer as women. They suffer as people who do not want to submit to genocidal and assimilationist policies of the oppressive dictatorial regimes that exist in the region. And so that's why I think that's another beauty of Kurdish women's stories. It cuts across all of that, really. Generation, borders. We don't recognize those borders. We are women. And then the only thing that connect us to other is our fight and our struggle for freedom, for liberation, for our rights, but also against fascism. And this book helps people around the world who are against fascism and racism and segregation to understand our pain, basically.
I think it does that very, very well. And I think, you know, it will be an inspiration to anybody who reads these stories. I wonder if you had younger Kurdish women's voices, how their stories would be. Do you think their stories would be any different to their elder sisters and mothers?
I think it depends where they are. There is differences now. The younger generation are much more aware politically, socially, even in terms of the women's question. They are much more aware of it, which is nice. And that you can see that in the book as well. I mean, the younger generation, they write more openly about or against suppression of women's rights and so on, and against patriarchy in Kurdish society, and how to fight this institutionalized patriarchy and sexism and so on. So, yeah, there are differences in their stories, but obviously the political suppression, the fascism in different states that have
remains the same.
Like Kurdistan, the struggle is very similar. I mean, you have stories of Rokin and Simal and lots of others, and Jala, and different people who still have, like, for example, the story of Jala, the last one, the youngest one in the collection. She, like, although she's so young, but she still recounts her memories of male relatives being taken in the genocidal campaign, and that how her grandmother and mother and everybody, they still never heard about them, and they're still waiting for their loved ones to come back, and how the entire men in the village were taken and then disappeared. So, even those types of political repressions, they still have their own effect on the younger generation, but the younger generation obviously have more access to the outside world, and then they're more politically aware.
Do you have a favorite story of the collection yourself?
All of them.
Silly question, Mark.
No, it's not silly, but really each story, each one of them, yeah. As I said in the launch event as well, I see part of myself in each one of them,
Tell us a little bit about yourself then, Hozan.
Oh my God, that's no. Yeah. What I avoided is... even in these stories, really, someone said, why you don't write your own and include it? I said, no, this is not about me. This is really about the space that we had to create for others, And as I said the other day, I'm not claiming to be giving voice to anyone, because these women, every Kurdish woman, have a powerful voice on their own. And that what is needed is the platform, is the spaces that otherwise we don't get. So as women, and as a matter of solidarity, we need to create those spaces. And as I said, each one of these stories, because of the political situations and because of political involvement of my family, and from a very early age, I can relate to everything that they say. I can relate to loss of loved ones, imprisonment, displacement, exile, pain, and so much. I can relate to all of that, and I have gone through all of that as well from a very early age. So I thought, this is me. This is my own story as well. This 25 story, it's fragmentation of different parts and different stories. But actually, it gives you a complete picture of who so many of us can be and can share the hope, optimism, love, loss, struggle, fighting. And one of the things I love about Sharvan, the female fighters, that they always say, struggle is life. And this is very true in the case of Kurdish women. And I always say that, if you don't struggle for your rights, for the rights of others, and for humanity, then your life really doesn't have much meaning. It will be just sleeping, eating, and going to work or doing some silly stuff. I mean, that just leaves people with emptiness, in my opinion.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And it's one thing that I've learned over 27 years is that the Kurdish people, and especially Kurdish women, have taught me that resistance is life, and that absolutely the Kurdish people, they have to resist. Yeah. They have no other choice. Yeah, otherwise, we just look today. Perhaps we could. I mean, I wanted to ask you while I was interviewing you. Perhaps if you could shed some light on and end perhaps on a more positive note, because we've heard a lot about the suffering and torture and resisting. And so bringing us up to date, you know, we look now to Kurdistan and one particular part of Kurdistan, of Rojava, of Western Kurdistan, where Kurdish women have taken the lead role in the Rojava revolution, resisting against ISIS. Obviously, they have an ideology, a feminist ideology that comes from their leader, Abdullah Öcalan, imprisoned on Imrali Island. And it's such an inspiration to so many people in terms of, you know, they call it the women's revolution and, and in terms of women's liberation. I just wonder what your thoughts are on why perhaps more Western feminists haven't really engaged and seen this women's revolution as an inspiration for other women. What's your thoughts about that?
I think there are many people who really look at Rojava revolution as an inspiration, even for the entire Kurdish population, wherever they are, be it in the Middle East or throughout, scattered throughout the world. Rojava is an inspiration, and we needed that. And there's always progressive politics in Kurdistan, in all parts of Kurdistan. But unfortunately, it was never given a chance to flourish. And that's why you see from the very beginning, many countries in the region and worldwide have tried to destroy Rojava as an example of revolutionary politics, of a politics that puts human beings in the center and women in the center of its, you know, policy making and of its ideology and strategy as well. And there are different feminisms around the world. I mean, obviously those who are the bourgeois, the liberals, and so on, those who just say women should be peaceful at all times. And these are the type who wouldn't really support anything that comes with armed struggle because they think women shouldn't take up arms. Whereas I have said that in many writings before, in many seminars that I give talks, there is no such a thing as being peaceful when it comes to ISIS and monstrous sexist and fascist Islamic groups like ISIS. You can't make peace with them. The only ideology and the only aim they have is to come to invade you and to basically take you as a sex slave, as a woman. Who would want that for themselves? You know, and so that's why there is, I think, is the issue of the armed struggle that they want to get involved with mainly. And also there's another stupid idea that I have heard this in a lot of conferences as well. Oh, yeah, but you are pro-American. Kurds are pro-American.
Oh, ridiculous.
And this is like really the most stupid thing I've ever heard in my life, because who isn't pro-American, you know, in terms of governments talking, not human beings? Who isn't? Which government? Give me one government, even in Europe, if they are not pro-American in terms of policies and their alliances and relationships. Plus, why do you want me to do the fight against imperialism and you yourself do nothing in your own comfort of your home? Why do you want Kurdish people to fight against imperialism as well, while they have a lot of other fights on their hands? So I see this as another silly, non-logical reason to dismiss Kurdish struggles and Kurdish revolutions taking place in different parts of Kurdistan. Obviously, America has its own interest in the region, not only in our part, but give me one Arab country who isn't, you know, basically a stooge of America in the region or in European countries. And it's interestingly, so many even Arab activists, they say, oh yeah, but you are pro-American. I really find this so insane. And so that's why there are skepticism about this. And I thought it's important to bring it to light and just to say how naive, really, for some people to think and to accuse the Kurdish Rojava revolution of not being worthy of support because it's Kurds are pro-American. No, lots of Kurdish people don't like American presence in the region. Yeah, but and what can you say? They are there, you know?
Yeah, and I think for the Kurds in Rojava, they have always had to look, you know, at various times during the struggle, you know, they're fighting for their existence and they have to negotiate and make alliances with people to survive. And they've always had a very strong principled position in that regard.
Exactly.
And for that, that luckily they have managed, you know, to garner so much international and widespread support around the world. And I think Rojava and especially the women of the YPJ have inspired so many people around the world and in their fight against ISIS. And you have a few stories of Kurdish women from Rojava in your book as well. So, Hozan, it's been wonderful to talk to you. I mean, I can't think of a better way to start my podcast series than talking about Kurdish women. They've been an inspiration for me all my adult life, to be honest, beginning with Kurdish journalists of Özgür Gündem when I was detained with them in 1993. Yeah. And I think a lot of Kurdish women will recognize the characters and the stories, will relate to them in your book. Is there anything else you would like to say before?
No, I just really thank you for this opportunity, Mark, and I hope people can spread the word about the book, to buy it, to promote it, to write reviews about it.
I was looking at the cover and it's very bright and very optimistic. And the stories in it are quite intense and almost sort of spiritually
Is the designer chose this color because the team thought that it's better to have it more colorful rather than something sad, because in all of these stories there's also hope, there's also them, there's lots of pride in each of them, and it's not only about suffering and struggles and so on, but it's also about the love for life.
Absolutely.
You know, each story, their struggle is also about their love for living, you know, for future and for humanity. So I think all of these stories show us why humanity matters so much, and that it should matter more to everybody around the world, really. And from here, I would like to call on everyone to support Kurdish women wherever they are, and to support this book. And thank you so much, Mark, for all you've been doing to promote this book. I'm really grateful.
Hozan Mahmud, it's been a pleasure and an honor to speak with you about your new edited book, Kurdish Women's Stories, available from Pluto Press. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Goodbye and good luck. Thank you.